3rd, just about 3 weeks until that happiest time of the year, Christmas. And by golly, we're still coming through. And joining me tonight in studio once again, he was gone this past week, but if you were keeping your eyes tuned to the tube, you might have picked him up on Babylon 5, my co-host and very good friend, Dwight Schultz. Dwight, welcome back.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure to be back here, Don.
Glad to see that alien did not get you.
No, it didn't. I'm alive, and hopefully the producers of the show will see it fit to bring me back.
Well, I know that they definitely have got to miss you. According to a security agent, Garibaldi, you had a chest full of ribbons, and when I saw you charge that invisible alien, I knew, by golly, I had the right guy in here to help me shovel this show.
Oh, please don't make fun of me, Don.
And tonight we have a very special show. You know, about a year and a half ago, a little over a year and a half ago, I had on this program, joining me from Washington, D.C., that perennial skeptic, Philip Klass, former senior editor with Aviation Week and Space Technology. And after he was on that show, Dwight, and after I debated him live down in Denver, he wouldn't come back.
Well, you and I both have our opinions as to why he won't come back here. I mean, we know why.
Do you think so?
I think so.
Well, and then I tried to get Jim Oberg to come back on the show. Jim kept telling me he had other things to do. So I finally had somebody, as a matter of fact, our good friend Dave Aaron, sent me a newspaper clipping where he was mentioned along with his business, a UFO audio video clearinghouse. And in there was a gentleman by the name of Dr. Michael Shermer, who heads up a skeptics organization right here in Southern California that I had not been, I'm ashamed to say, aware of. Now, to tell you who Dr. Shermer is, he publishes a magazine called Skeptic, which I have two issues here in front of me, which I'm going to be reading something.
And it's a very attractive.
Very attractive magazine. Dr. Shermer is the publisher of Skeptic. Now, I'm reading this directly from the magazine. He's the assistant adjunct professor of history of science at Occidental College. He's published several books, including Teacher Child Science and co-authored Teacher Child Math. Boy, I could have used you, Dr. Shermer, about 25 years ago, yes. Real badly. Math Magics with Dr. Arthur Benjamin. He's just finished two books, Heretic Scientist. I wonder if we're going to be heretics after tonight.
I don't know. We'll see. That's what this show is about, right?
And a biography of Alfred Russel Wallace and the Chaos of History. Now, I can tell you from my university days, history was pretty chaotic. I lived a little chaos, as a matter of fact.
My judgment is that it didn't escape from the 60s, because no one today seems to have a sense of history. It's one of those remarkable things that everyone took it for granted, and now we are suffering for it.
Well, that's very possible, and we might be suffering more before it's all said and done. But I have this magazine in front of me, and to begin with, Dr. Michael Shermer, we would like to welcome you here. I'm glad you could make it.
Thank you.
Let's see, is that coming through okay? Yep, it's coming through okay. The Skeptics Organization, what exactly, how do you describe that?
We are a group who investigate claims of the paranormal, pseudoscience, fringe science, revolutionary science, any kinds of extraordinary claims and phenomena. Skepticism for us is not a position you take. It's an approach to studying phenomena. That's a mistake I think a lot of people make, that, and I think skeptics make too, that we have to be skeptical of everything. The reason I'm a skeptic is because I don't believe it. But I believe lots of things. I think there is a possibility cryonics could turn out to be a viable means of life extension. I do think there's probably alien intelligences elsewhere in the cosmos. Now, whether they've come here or not is a different question, you see. So it's not what I'm trying to do with the skeptical movement is move it away from this idea that skeptics are just old curmudgeons and naysayers and deniers who don't believe anything, because really, if you take skepticism to its extreme form, it's an utter waste of time. You'll never learn anything.
It becomes another form of fanaticism.
Yes, that's right. And
it's one thing with this particular program and with the magazine that Vicky and I and the staff publish. We have taken a very skeptical look and have done a number of telling exposés on various people in the field that we have found to be charlatans. But from your perspective as the the dean in Southern California of the skeptical movement. Where, in your opinion, does the UFO phenomenon fall?
Well, I'm skeptical. Now, as I said, and I think it's important.
No, first let me ask you this. And you know, whenever I give a public lecture, I go on TV. I always try to make
he does
this,
go on.
I try to make this a point. And on. I've been accused of it. UFO, what does UFO mean to you? When you see that three-letter acronym, or when you hear UFO, what immediately goes through your mind?
Alien intelligences that have come to Earth.
Thank you. I'm glad you said that. Because when we talk about UFOs, what we're talking about is the literal, strict definition of what the acronym stands for.
Okay.
Unidentified flying object. We have never stated publicly, either in print or verbally, that UFO equates to alien spaceship, and we make a very clear definition.
Okay, well, that's good to know. So, I mean, if you're going to argue that, for example, are there aircraft that are unidentified because they're secret by, you know, government secret?
Unidentified means unidentified.
Yeah, I know, but unidentified by us, but maybe somebody knows what they are, and we're not being told. I think that's far more likely to be the case than it's an alien craft. So we may have more room for agreement than you think.
Okay.
I think we're going to agree quite a bit. But the problem, and I started to talk to you earlier about this. I became interested again in this phenomenon because basically, from a document standpoint, the government of the United States has lied. I mean, it simply has lied about this subject over and over and over again since the first flaps of 1947. I didn't place a lot of I didn't think it meant anything way back when I was 20 years old, but now that I'm 47 and I have seen people confront one another on the big tube because it's an immediate source of information, the scientists. Those who are supposed to really know, when they are confronted with something that they can't explain, they begin to attack. They begin to it's done ad hominem attacks. It's misdirection, the magician's tool. Let's throw something in to get you away from what we're talking about. And they don't have answers. I mean, there have been some pretty incredible things on the tube in the past few years. And Jim Oberg, who debated Don on Larry King's program, literally was caught with his pants down. And now this guy is, I used to read him in Omni magazine, and I had great respect for him. But I totally lost respect for him because clearly what was seen on this video, it was the STS-48, this space shuttle flight, was a remarkable image. And it was inexplicable. And when he tried to come up with an explanation, and Don pointed out to him the facts of the craft, he pointed out exactly that what Jim Oberg had just said happened, could not have happened because, I'll let Don explain it to you clearly, Oberg immediately went into a personal attack. And I've read that. Martin Gardner, I showed you. I've read personal attacks. I heard Phil Klass personally attack. And it seems to me that we're not talking, you know, we're not really trying to find out what the answer is here and say, I don't know. Nobody seems to have the humility to say, I don't know.
But I think skeptics are often put into a position, or they put themselves into a position where they feel like they have to have an explanation for absolutely everything. And that if you don't, somehow you're giving too much ground. And I think the last point you made is a good one. It's okay to say, I don't know. And we should all be willing to say, I don't know. So if you mean by UFO it's simply unidentified, then okay. What's wrong with that? Nothing. If you mean by that alien crafts, which apparently you don't, then that's a different story.
Well, the question, as I see it, and I heard Stanton Friedman state this very well back on October the 1st, when King did a two-hour special out at close to the test site in Nevada, out close to Area 51. And he had a number of researchers on this program. He had Kevin Randall, who co-authored The Truth About the UFO Crash at Roswell. He had Stanton Friedman on. He had Dr. Stephen Greer. and another fellow by the name of Glenn Campbell, who now lives out there and has been conducting research around Area 51. And Friedman was asked about, and they were talking about abductions, they were talking about UFOs, and Friedman stated, and I thought this was so succinct, he said, "It's not a question, Larry, of are UFOs real? It's more of a question, are any of these UFOs real?" Speaking about the possibility that they might be something other than from a prosaic explanation from this planet.
Now, in this case, what are you meaning by real?
In other words, for example, if somebody were to come up and say, "Do you believe in UFOs? Do you believe they're real?" Well, just by the very nature of that question is illogical. Of course UFOs are real. Anytime you look in the sky, you see something you cannot identify.
Right,
that
real.
Is a true, unidentified flying object.
Sure.
But the question is, do you believe that UFOs are alien spaceships?
Right.
Well, it's not a question of whether one believes or not. The question is, are any of them possibly an alien craft? Or a craft that could be described as something than other than being manufactured here, I guess, would be the question. Now, I think we're close. Well, we're going to have to take a break in about 2 minutes. Let me ask you this. The scientific establishment today, let me put a preposition to you. The scientific establishment today is much the way the church was 400 years ago when Galileo was making his first telescope. In other words, today science has become a priestly hierarchy, and the heretics, those who go outside and risk the displeasure of their peer group, today are ostracized, much like people were burned at the stake 400 years ago. Do you buy that? Do you see any validity to that?
To a certain extent, this is called the social construction of science. Position. And I don't go as far as the most extremists who say that science is just like any other social tradition, religion, art, music, whatever. It's embedded in a culture and it's determined by the culture. The culture determines which questions scientists ask and how they answer them and so on. I don't go that far. But I do recognize that there is such a thing as a scientific priesthood. There is a pecking order. We all know which universities are the best ones to be at. We all know who the big names are and who you have to answer to, the best journals and so on. And we know how to get that power, and everybody who plays the game understands that. However, there is one mechanism in science that makes it different from these other traditions, and that is the built-in mechanism of self-correction. That despite its limitations, the problems, mistakes that are made, the unfair ostracization of heretics and so on, eventually truth does come out. Changes are made. Paradigm shifts do occur. Revolutions happen. These things do change. Unlike religion, which stays pretty much the same. Its goal is stability. Science's goal is not stability. Even though it's filled with all kinds of problems, it's very human, and scientists, they have big egos, they make mistakes, they squelch people unfairly, they do all those things because they're people. But in the long run, things do change because of that self-corrective nature.
Okay, we're going to take a very quick break. My name is Don Ecker, the show. You know, I've got the first Skeptics magazine you sent to me. Now, this is December 3rd. That means that in 3 weeks and one day, we're going to be looking for that jolly old fat guy in the red suit to come clomping around. Now, I opened
quantum
up...
Quantum speeds.
Yes, I opened up your magazine, and I found something in here that troubled me greatly. It's an article that somebody sent in called "The Science of Santa." Now, for all you people out there, if you've got little ones around the radio or the TV set, run them into the other room because I'm going to read this very quickly. But this is kind of, I guess, kicking Santa in the pants and putting him out in the trash bin. As a result of an overwhelming lack of requests, and with research help from that renowned scientific journal, Spy Magazine, I am pleased to present the annual scientific inquiry into Santa Claus. Now, this is where it starts to trouble me. No known species of reindeer can fly, but there are 300,000 species of living organisms yet to be classified. And while most are insects or germs, this doesn't completely rule out flying reindeer, which only Santa has ever seen. And there are 2 billion children or persons under 18 in the world. But since Santa doesn't appear to handle the Muslim, Hindu, Jewish, or Buddhist children, that reduces the workload to about 15% of the total, which still comes out to 378 million kids. And at an average rate of 3.5 kids per household, how do they ever split up that odd kid?
That half child?
I never quite understood that either.
You know how they split them up.
But that comes out to 91. Well, yeah, I know how Jeffrey Dahmer split them up. Oh, but the 91.8 million homes, okay? Now, Santa has about 31 hours of Christmas to work with because of time zone changes. So he travels east to west, which would seem logical, right? This works out to 822.6 visits a second. Now that's to say that for each Christian household with good children, Santa has 1/1000th of a second to park a sleigh, hop out, jump down the chimney, fill the stockings, distribute the remaining presents under the tree, eat his snacks, and then go back up the chimney, get into the sleigh, and move on to the next house. Now, assuming that each of the 91.8 million stops are distributed evenly, okay, that still works out to 0.78 miles between households, which comes out to 75.5 million miles. Now, Santa's sleigh, now you think about how quickly he has to go. He's moving at 650 miles a second, or 3,000 times the speed of sound. Now, the payload, I'm not going to go through all this, but the payload is 353,000 tons of goodies traveling at 650 miles per second, okay? So, in other words, if the reindeer were to go that fast, the lead pair would absorb 14.3 quintillion joules of energy per second, okay? In short, they'll burst into flame instantaneously, which will cause all the reindeer behind them to blow up, create a deafening sonic boom. The entire reindeer team will then be vaporized within 4.26 thousandths of a second. Santa, meantime, will be subjected to 17.5 million times greater forces, greater than gravity. Michael, are you a killjoy?
I hate to take... Well, you got to read the last line.
In conclusion, if Santa ever did deliver presents on Christmas Eve, he's dead
he's
now.
He's dead. He's history. Yeah, you know, I hate to apply science to everything, but, you know, some things we can't take too seriously.
I'm not letting my daughter read this magazine.
You see, skeptics can have a sense of humor about this
stuff,
right?
Oh, is this what this was? This was fun.
We're not curmudgeons now.
Well, then why don't skeptics... Now, this is... I tried to get earlier, talk about this earlier, but for me, this all goes back into history. I mean, why is it that skeptics refuse really to deal with the government's involvement in this myth, if it is a myth, or this reality, if it is a reality? I have never heard a good explanation for why the government has lied for over 40 years. And they have. I mean, it's incontrovertible that they have lied. I can give you, if you don't believe me, I'll give you one great example, which is something that I remember, that many, 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 many years ago, Mike Wallace interviewed Donald Kehoe. Do you know who Donald Kehoe mm-hmm. is? Yes. And Kehoe had just been on the Armstrong Theater, and they had cut him off because he mentioned four documents that the government...
Three documents.
Three documents that the government had, that he called secret, that prove that the government believes that there are intelligent beings flying things around in our air and we're not familiar with. And Wallace said, well, I just called the Air Force and talked to their spokesman, and they've called you a liar. They said, actually, he was four. Three of the documents don't exist, and the fourth does exist, but it doesn't say what you said it says. And are they lying? And Kehoe said, I'm standing by my story. He mentioned the documents, the names of the documents, the numbers of the documents. And Wallace, of course, cut him off and ended the program by saying something very snide. Today, many, many, many years after 1958, all of those documents have been retrieved to the Freedom of Information Act. And they all said what Kehoe said they said. Hmm. Now, why did the Air Force use a major journalist to lie, to propagandize a point of view?
Mm-hmm. Well, surely you would agree that if indeed they lied, it wouldn't be the first time the government or some agent of the government lied about something to the American public.
No, not at all.
Right? So, I mean, this is a...
But this is about a supercilious and stupid subject.
I don't know in that specific case. However, part of the problem, your first part of your question is, why don't skeptics investigate why the government lies to us? The part of the problem is tracking it down, getting the right person, getting somebody to say, yeah, this is why we lied, or even that we lied. How do you do that? Who do you find? Who do you talk to? Well, especially when decades have gone by and the bottom line
about the whole UFO thing is this. From January of 1953, when under the auspices of the Central Intelligence Agency, they convened together a scientific panel, which was headed up by Dr. H.P. Robertson, okay, and some of the top scientific and military talent in the United States at that time. And they sat down for several days. Today, this panel is collectively known as the Robertson Panel. And they spent about 12 hours looking at tapes and talking about specific cases. And they then came to the conclusion that it was their job, number one, to not make a determination on what UFOs may or may not be, but how do we demystify it in the public mind? How do we demystify it? Now, this is all a matter of public record today. And they came to the conclusion that the way we demystify UFOs, and they never addressed what they were or what they weren't, but how they demystify it is to debunk it. And they recommended that there be a systematic debunking campaign carried out through the media. And they were even going to recruit Walt Disney and Arthur Godfrey to help with this debunking campaign. Now, this is a matter of record, and I can show you exactly where this information is. Now, why would they do that with something that didn't exist, if it didn't exist? Now, let me read this to you before you respond. Now, this is a report that I brought in with me. Now, the individual that did the report, the name of this report is Operation Blue Fly Research Project, Report to Congress, by Clifford E. Stone, who's a recognized and very meticulous researcher. He's retired from the United States Army. He was retired. He was a senior non-commissioned officer. He's been involved in UFO research now for about 20 years. And this is directly from Air Force regulations. And I'm quoting now. Moreover, reports of unidentified flying objects which could affect national security are made in accordance with JANAP 146, or Air Force Manual 55-11, and are not part of the Blue Book system. Project Blue Book, of course, for those people out there that may not be aware of it, was the public relations effort by the Air Force where they supposedly conducted research into what UFOs were. The Air Force experience, therefore, confirms the impression of the University of Colorado researchers that the defense function could be performed within the framework established for intelligence and surveillance operations without the continuance of a special unit such as Project Blue Book. So what they're saying here is that unidentified flying objects which might affect national security are reported somewhere else. Mm-hmm. Yet all this time they were saying there is no such thing as UFOs. They're delusions, they're misidentifications.
But wait a minute now. I think we're back to talking about maybe two different things. Are we talking about alien crafts
that they mean unidentified as delusions?
Or do they mean Russian spacecraft or aircraft or something like
no,
that?
No, no, no. They're talking about unidentified flying objects. They would recognize... And anyone would recognize within the intelligence a Soviet craft. And at that time in the 60s, do you think the Russians would have been crazy enough to actually attempt to penetrate American airspace within the continental United States? And I'm not talking about flying around the border, mm-hmm. but to fly an aircraft. They didn't have anything that could do that, that could get away from our interceptors or our anti-missiles.
This is Air Force regulation. This is what they considered it. Unidentified flying object, UFOB, relates to any airborne object which, by performance, aerodynamics, characteristics, or unusual features, does not conform to any presently known aircraft or missile type, or which cannot be positively identified as a familiar object.
And is it that you are referring to in the statement you just
read?
Yeah,
JANAP 146.
And is there a UFOA if that's a UFOB?
Well, that was actually A. B is familiar objects.
Oh, I see.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'm going to give you a minute to think about that because we're at the bottom of the hour. When we come back, we'll let you answer. Then we have some phone calls to take. But in the meantime, I'm Don Ecker. Joining me tonight, once again, Dwight Schultz, our in-studio guest, Dr. Michael Shermer of the Southern California Skeptics Society. And we'll be back after these words. Okay, we're back, and let me make a correction there. That is the California Skeptics
Society. No, it's not.
Just the Skeptic Society.
The Skeptic Society.
We're actually international.
Right. It used to be the California Skeptics. Now it's just the Skeptic Society. Go ahead and slap my hand away. Ouch, that hurt.
Rush Limbaugh does that.
Okay, Michael, did you have a response to
that? Let me ask you this. You had asked me the question about scientists being a priesthood who have a certain circle of people they allow in and exclude others, and they call them heretics. Right. Well, if that's true, then wouldn't that be true for all belief systems? Any mm-hmm. group of people kind of locks themselves into this circle. They have this paradigm or this belief structure that they go by, and you're either in or out if you believe or not. And so is it possible that the same data that you see as the paper trail you talk about, it's proof, it's obvious, how can you deny it, and yet you have this other group that says, that's not data to us, that's just anomalous noise, and it's, you know, so could it just be, you know, these two different belief systems, or is there some way to get to a final answer about this?
Well, there is a could. I mean, the problem here is, and this is where it goes back, the scientists are funded by the government.
Well, not everybody.
Well, most. The dollar amounts.
Yes, it's huge.
Yes, that's right. So we don't have to. We really, and most.
Actually, it's something like 51%. 51% of the grants are federally funded.
And the thing is, you have these documents, and they tell a very literal story. And when you discuss this with someone who sets themselves apart from you by calling you a fool ahead of time, you like a Carl Sagan. Who makes a generalization about anybody who believes in this subject? How do you address? You can't address this subject. You hear the same retort: extraordinary claims demand extraordinary evidence. And then when you say, "I think that this paper trail is extraordinary," who's proof? I can't. We haven't time. That's old stuff. That's been, you know, you. It's never investigated by. There's never been, to my knowledge, a modern society of scientists, other than because the blue book and condom are sullied. They really are. Both of those reports are sullied. It's a simple. You just take the paper trail from 47 up until the present day. What has been obtained through the Freedom of Information Act, and it tells literally a story. And instead of denying it or not examining it, why? It's a simple thing to do. If your magazine just took the time out to study this paper trail, you would have to come to some, perhaps you could debunk this whole thing, and properly so. But those of us who are involved in this field, there is no government money coming to the other side.
Yeah.
It's only coming from the skeptics are all, I mean, if you go down the line, they're all government connected. Klass, Oberg, Menzel, Sagan, all of the Martin Gardner.
Yes, but no, wait a minute. That implies that somehow
the
government is sort of directing or controlling their belief system.
No, it isn't. But that they work for them. They're aware of where they get funded.
But so what? I mean, this almost implies
remember,
a conspiracy.
No. I'm not talking about conspiracy. Right. I really am not. I mean, I'm saying it's a logical. It's a logical step to say if I'm getting paid by somebody. All right. For instance, I know a pilot, I know a pilot who was fired from Pan Am because he was told not to report a UFO. He reported a UFO and he was fired. All right.
Now wait a minute. Klass, he doesn't get paid by the government for his UFO stuff. He gets paid for his other things. The UFO stuff he does on his free time, and PsyCop doesn't pay him for that stuff. He does this because he loves it, and so. If you want to imply that Klass is not being objective, or he's not treating your data fairly, it's not because of a government connection. It would be for some other personal reason.
Well, Klass, yes, but his connection with the government, there's an avocation. I've heard him tell someone who said the government lied lady sitting across from the table here, he said, leave the country. The government, if you don't like the government, if you think it's that bad, then leave. Because he wouldn't admit that the government lies. He wouldn't admit it. Wouldn't admit that the government lies. Now, what did you just say to me a few moments ago? So I ask you, if you worked for the government, if you advocate something, I mean, Don has asked him the question, why would anybody as brilliant as you spend so much, you said, because he loves it. It's more, if you love it, then you'll admit something. So if you say, does the government lie? Of course the government lies, but he wouldn't. And so I say, if he won't call the government a liar, then there's something, because the government does. And
routinely,
it's a simple question.
Routinely.
So there's something there. And that.
But
and
when
my
you
question,
say the government lies, who?
Yes.
Who the government?
All agencies, all aspects have lied. The military has lied. The intelligence agencies.
We're talking about the military.
Lied routinely, but and generally, we're speaking about the United
okay,
States.
Okay, let me just set up a hypothetical.
Yes.
1947 is right. the Roswell. Okay, mm-hmm. So we're coming up on 50 year anniversary in a couple of years.
Right.
So we're talking in 50 years, how many turnovers in various positions have there been in these various agencies you're talking about, such that with each turnover there'd have to be sort of a debriefing, wouldn't there? Now listen, Bob, you're taking over this position. Now we have this kind of thing we're doing here. We don't talk about this, and we don't leak that, and we've shredded this, and we've hidden that.
Well, how many turnovers were there on the mustard gas experiments that were kept secret for 40 years?
I'm not sure that that's how it works, though. You see, I think
no, but it was kept secret for 40 years.
Well, I think
you have ongoing sightings and ongoing
we have cover-ups,
right? So
we have evidence that suggests that at least going back to 1950, according to documents that have been released over the years, that whatever lay behind the UFO phenomenon was considered more secret than the hydrogen bomb. Okay, going back to at least 1950. Now, this was reported by Dr. Wilbert Smith, who was from the Canadian government. He was making a report to the Canadian Department of Transportation, which later this document was released. But he reported in this report that Dr. Vannevar Bush was heading up an effort to try to find out, and a group of scientists to try to find out what lay behind the UFO phenomenon, and that this phenomenon was classified levels above the hydrogen bomb. Later, Dr. Robert Sarbacher, very famous, brilliant scientist, one of the most famous of the 20th century, and I have a copy of the letter that he wrote, a researcher, admitted in this letter before he died that, yes, there were recovered disks. I was offered a position to work on one of them, and I declined for whatever reason. He didn't state why he declined. And he said, I didn't give it that much thought. Now, that in itself struck me as incredibly, if there were flying saucers, UFOs, that were alien craft, which then they wouldn't be UFOs, they'd be alien craft. But if there were, and we had some, we being the United States, and I were a scientist and was offered a position to work on something like it, how could you turn it down? But he did. Mm-hmm. But he admitted that there was something there. Now, with that type of evidence, anecdotal though it may be, how can you continually deny that there is fire where there's this incredible amount of smoke?
Mm-hmm. Well,
you can say it's bunk. But that's the problem is that there seems to be no clearinghouse. That even when
in the UFO case, you seem to have two camps. There's the believers and the skeptics. Who's in the middle? You're pretty hard on Sagan, but and here's a guy who seems to be pretty friendly to the idea of alien intelligences.
Well, he says if you believe in UFOs, you're a fool. But UFOs, he means that, you know.
Yeah, aliens have come here.
It is just, but and of course, he once took that position. That he believed.
In 1962.
So you say to yourself, what? Why? I mean, I know that you reach your peak at 30 when you're a physicist. You know, I understand. So maybe he's on the downslide, I say. But the point is, why is it necessary? As I can read you, this, it's a vicious attack on anybody who believes what you say is not true.
But look at like, okay, you brought the mustard gas example. How about the downwinders example in Utah, the people that live downwind from the nuclear fallout? Okay, these things do come out, right?
40 years.
Despite apparent cover.
Well, let me ask you this.
But that's still 40 years.
And they
swore an oath to secrecy.
Let me ask you this. Do you believe that the government can keep a secret?
Well, there's Watergate, right? So not always.
But they can.
It depends how... I guess it depends how extensive it is. I mean,
so the mustard gas experiments weren't a secret for 40 years, and it wasn't just released in the New York Times.
Yes. Okay.
It was a revelation.
But, yes, that's
our
true.
Our own.
Right.
Our own.
But mustard gas, I mean, that strikes me as very different from these extraordinary theories you're calling them here in your magazine of
UFOs. Well, what could be more extraordinary than a government agency like the Atomic Energy Commission feeding plutonium to retarded children in their milk to see what happens to the human body? Now, that's pretty damned extraordinary. Mm-hmm. Hey, I'll tell you what, we can get so caught up here. We got all the lines lit up. Let's take some phone calls. We're going to go, well, as a matter of fact, I think... Is that our resident skeptic?
Yes.
Is that Ralph? Okay, Ralph from Escondido. Is that you?
Yes, it is.
Well, good evening.
Good evening, Ralph.
I heard the word skeptic, so I thought I'd call. Hello, everyone. Dwight and Dr. Shermer and Don.
Good evening. What's on your mind?
Well, you know, I know of two places where a real healthy dose of skepticism would be warranted, and one is Bob Lazar's story. And I think Dwight was right. He said, go to the physicist. So I've directed some questions to the UCSD physics department. I'm trying to run down this element 115. German physicists have just announced the creation of element 110, which is a short-lived radionuclide, but there's really no evidence of 115, nor can they explain how the atomic weight and number were determined. Also, they postulate a gravity wave, but no one has successfully measured such a wave.
Absolutely not, yeah.
And I was wondering if Dr. Shermer could comment on Bob Lazar's story and also Mr. Hoagland's stories about the features on Mars and the Moon.
Oh, yes. Well, the features on Mars is an obvious classic example of the mind fighting pattern within random shadows and shapes and things like that. I'm not particularly.
Then let me ask you a question. If that's true, why would NASA lie for over a decade that they had other photographs of the Cydonia region, which proved that the face on Mars was simply a trick of light and shadow? And Senator Richard Lugar from Indiana then called them on it and said, well, if you have these photographs and you've been telling, you sent a letter to my office that you have these photographs, I want to see them. And suddenly they don't have them. They lied. Why would they do that?
What seems to me that if anybody would want to propose that these shadows are actual
structure, it would be NASA.
Because how better could they get more funds?
But answer his question, though. I mean, really, answer his question.
Well, I just did.
No, you didn't. You very neatly evaded answering that question.
No, I'm saying...
Why would they for 10 years say we have these two photos that prove, which is what scientists... I've got this, I performed this experiment, it proves it. All right, let's see them. We don't have them. What conclusion would you draw?
I would double-check the first statement that they were...
Oh, I've got a copy of the letter. I've got a copy of the letter.
10 years of stating... You don't have to look any further. We've got the photos that prove this is light and shadow.
Mm-hmm.
Where are they?
Who saw them? Yeah, where were they? Where was this what was the truth of this claim in the first place? I mean, who made this claim in the first place?
Well, the NASA public relations people. I've got a copy of all these letters at home.
This is what I say. You know,
how much is this is confusion lost in the noise of a huge bureaucratic agency like NASA?
But would NASA stay confused for over 10 years?
Well, I'm not sure they care about this question.
Well, they do care about it, though. They do care about it, though.
I don't think they're taking it.
Richard Hoagland, among other people, has made them care about it because he's raised such a ruckus.
Could I ask a question?
Yes.
Sure.
Sorry, Ralph.
Hoagland claims some kind of higher order mathematical relationship between the Mars features and features on the Moon. Have you heard of such a correlation? And could you explain it or comment on it?
Yeah, I've heard this. To me, it's no more impressive than the fact that you could take the Washington Monument and the Great Pyramid of Cheops and find relationships between the numbers there. Mm-hmm. The human mind is very clever at doing this. You can take, you know, take the base of the Great Pyramid and multiply by the speed of light. You get the distance from here to the sun, you know, that sort of thing. Anybody with a clever mind and a calculator could do that in an hour.
Have you heard of the Bob Lazar stories about a spacecraft using an element 115 and propelled by gravity waves? Have you ever any comment on those?
No, I've not heard that. No one's detected gravity waves that I know of. To me, I think they're just still theoretical.
Yeah.
Okay, we've got to move along,
thanks, Ralph,
because the lines are lit up.
Thanks a lot.
But, hey, I appreciate your call, and we've missed you. Where you been?
Well, I've been kind of laying low here with Prop 187.
Yes, I heard you on KOGO.
That was me.
That was you.
Take care, Ralph.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, look, we got a bunch more phone calls. We're going to take them. We got to stop very quickly for a break. Renee is over here kicking me and pinching me, telling me that we're 3 minutes or 2 minutes past due. So, Renee, do your thing. Back. Okay. Now, I'm going to tell you how to get some Christmas shopping done quick. And, boy, those lines have lit up. Let's go to Alan, who's calling Rancho Santa and
Margarita.
Margarita?
Yeah.
Is that Margarita? Alan, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hi.
Okay. Is that Rancho Santa Margarita?
Yes, correct.
Oh, okay. I didn't know if I was reading it right or not. You're calling in on Dimension.
Yes, I am.
Okay. Good evening.
Hi,
welcome to the show.
You have a most intriguing program based upon your brilliant analysis of the Santa Claus phenomenon. my question is that I recently saw a video clip on one of the cable stations. I'm not exactly sure which one. I presume that the clip showed an object, a spherical object, darting around the space shuttle, emitting light beams of some sort. Can you do you have any knowledge of that? Or
you're talking about STS-48.
Okay.
Okay.
What is the possible explanation for that?
Well, there was Dwight was just asking about light beams. No. Yeah, this
does he mean the projectile or whatever it was that appeared to come through the atmosphere? Is that what you're talking about?
Come from the lower part of the screen.
It was some sort of a spherical object that was moving around at a very rapid rate of speed at a very peculiar angle.
Well, it made a 145 degree extreme right angle turn, shot out into deep space, and then appeared to circle around and come back.
And then it looked like there were some sort of light beams or laser beams.
That came up from the atmosphere.
Right.
Right. That was, and I've never heard an explanation for that.
Well, Jim Oberg had one when I debated him on Larry King.
Not for the...
Well, for that, well, that was a plume yes, from the rocket firing. According to Dr. James Oberg, who is a NASA contract scientist, and I debated Oberg on Larry King Live on CNN. As a matter of fact, I broke that story. Okay, the story of STS-48. I broke that first on NBC, then on CNN. According to Oberg, these objects that were moving around were wastewater from a urine dump from the space shuttle that didn't happen until approximately 13 minutes after this sequence happened. But at any rate, the weird maneuvers that these objects appear to take, according to Oberg, was caused by the shuttle firing its attitude thrusters. Okay? No, incidentally, I'm not buying a bit of this. Now, the camera...
Oh, really?
The camera that was photographing these was in, at that point, lifetime. Incidentally, the day after the Larry King program, that channel was encrypted. That satellite feed was encrypted. I didn't know if you knew that.
No.
But be that as it may... when the shuttle did begin to make some attitude thruster adjustments and the shuttle moved, the camera moved because the camera had been fastened to the shuttle.
It was a fixed position. It was not a movable camera.
Right. So what were they? Well, I think they were UFOs, unidentified flying objects. I didn't say spaceships. But if, in fact, they were a manufactured object, I sincerely doubt that the propulsion system was made in Detroit.
Right, because the rate of speed and the angles and so forth was something.
Well, they were in space, so they would be spaceships by definition, right?
Yes.
Yes.
So, where are they coming from?
Right.
Right,
but
what?
This
was a tape that was actually shot on the space shuttle, right?
Right. Well, yeah, this was a live feed.
No, the remarkable thing about that video was, of course, the object which made it literally just changed direction seconds before the projectile came rushing up through the atmosphere at the exact location in your mind
where it
would have been.
Yes.
And that was what was quite extraordinary. And the explanation that it was part of frozen particles, literally, just floating around in space, was difficult when Don pointed out that the camera was fixed and that the entire shuttle would have rotated.
Right.
Oberg had no explanation for it and then went into an attack on Don. And that, I was explaining earlier, was for me...
I don't understand why people who can't explain something have to immediately attack it.
That's right. The point is that had Jim Oberg said, you know, that's a good point, I don't know, it still wouldn't have proved. I mean, I wouldn't have walked away thinking anything. But at that moment, I then became suspicious, because you usually only become you only attack someone when you are hiding or when you are fearful, and it's unnecessary. And nothing was accomplished after that. Nothing was accomplished on that show once he started to attack Don. And so those of us who were starved to find out, you know, was this a nice particle? Was this a Star Wars test that we were looking at that they wanted to keep? We would never find out. We'll never find out.
All right. One more quick question, if you don't mind. The Aurora Project, this is an aircraft that purportedly can travel at Mach 12?
Well, the Air Force, number one, denies emphatically that there is, number one, an Aurora Project, or number two, an aircraft that can travel in those excessive Mach speeds. They claim that there is no such animal. Nobody truly knows. I have no doubt that they, in fact, do have a successor to the SR-71, something that succeeded it. But at this point, there's no idea what this may be, even though Jane's Defense Weekly reported on it, and what this craft, what speeds this craft may attain. Michael, do you know anything about that?
No, I don't.
Because I think I heard on one of your previous programs, I do not recall who had mentioned it.
Lee Graham, I believe, from Aerojet.
Did he make a statement in the order of about Mach 12?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I believe Popular Science has just too released a diagram of a proposed, the artichoke, which is also similar.
Now, the SR-71 is stated as being able to cruise at Mach 3.
Yes.
Right. So that's a quantum leap from 3 to 12.
Well, unless you talk about the speeds that our NASA capsules have been able to travel in space, in a zero-G environment.
24,000 miles an hour. Yeah.
But you're basically, I mean, you're going into hyperspace, and I mean, it's a hypersonic.
Right.
You're moving up there into space, and speeds are...
Okay, well, we're going to move along. Alan, thank you for your call.
Have a good evening, gentlemen.
You too.
Good night.
Let's go to New York. We've got John, who's calling in on satellite. Good evening, John.
Hi, guys. Another Saturday night shot to you know what.
Well, I'm glad you're here to join us.
Okay, I called about something else, but you mentioned the NASA. I believe that they're not scrambling it, but they probably have their own video channels also, but I think they're running on a
few. No, it's encoded. Delay. It's encoded. It's coming in on a delay.
Yeah, on a delay, right, but so if they see something, they can cut it before it goes out.
Right.
But it's not actually scrambled. Are we talking about the one, it seems like this one I haven't seen, where there was something moving, an object, and then a beam or another object came toward it?
That's correct.
And then they cut the camera right at that spot, right?
Yes, that is correct.
Yeah, okay. I wasn't sure if that was the one. Okay, I have in front of me a NASA Tech Briefs. Have you ever seen this?
A what?
NASA Tech Briefs. It's a magazine.
Yes, I have.
Okay. In the November 1994 issue, there's a artist drawing or artist by Peter Max. You've heard of him?
Yes, sure.
He's a famous... Okay. Yeah. And there are two UFOs on the cover.
Okay. What do they look like?
Well, let me describe the cover if I can. There's a picture of the Earth. I would say a photograph. There's a photograph, I guess, of the Statue of Liberty peeking out behind the Earth. a drawing of a face.
I don't think it's a photograph.
And then there are stars, kind of, you know, big stars and little triangles, little things, and then there are two flying saucers.
Well, are you familiar with who Semyasi is supposed to be?
No.
You're not? Well, have you ever heard of the Billy Meyer brouhaha?
Oh.
Billy Meyer?
No, the name. I heard the name.
The Swiss farmer that supposedly has had all these contacts.
One-armed farmer.
The Pleiadian astronauts.
Pleiadian.
Well, Semyonovsky is this supposedly gorgeous blonde space chick. Now, they didn't by any chance stick her in there, did they?
No, I don't see that. But I think that if NASA published their magazine with UFOs or flying saucers on the cover, it must be real.
No, well, why not go another step and have Semyonovsky on there? Come on.
Well, the Statue of Liberty's on there. But one thing I do want to say, I know myself for a fact that the press, of course, is controlled, and I can think back to the first.
By who?
Well, the government. It must be, because there was a case.
No, John. If anything controls them, it's a marketplace.
Let me tell you what I saw. The first coup attempt of in Panama.
Uh huh.
Which didn't go well, you know.
Does this have anything to do with UFOs?
No.
Oh.
But I'm just talking about
this is government cover up.
What the government says. Okay, I'm sitting here. It was about 12:30 in East Coast time. You know, just around lunchtime, and I'm. Sit back, I just finished lunch, and I'm looking at this, and there they are talking about this invasion or coup attempt, I guess you could call it.
Are you talking about when we invaded Panama?
No, just before then.
Oh, okay.
Okay, I forget, it was a few months before, or maybe a year before, I think it was a time lag there, but I forget what it was.
Yeah, Noriega was still in charge.
Right.
Okay, well, you got less than a minute, because we're almost at the top of the hour.
Real quick. Anyway, I sat back, and I just get the gist of what's going on. And all of a sudden, the picture fades to black. It didn't cut out. It faded to black. I went to another channel, which is the same network, same thing. After technical difficulties came up after a while, they went to a commercial. I think they went back to technical difficulties. Then they just went back to the soap opera they had interrupted. And not another thing was ever done. Now, you don't lose a feed out of Washington. And it faded. It didn't go snowy. It didn't blip. Burp, do anything like that, it just faded to black. Now,
well, in military operations, the government does control.
But
this was a coup attempt from within Panama.
Yes.
Yeah,
this is the one that our government
did. What they were apparently afraid of was that Noriega was watching
right.
TV on his satellite.
Right. Sure, Saddam Hussein watched CNN every day
during
Desert Storm.
But, I mean, there's proof that one call from the government and a big network will kill the story.
Hey, before we go, John, how's the weather back there? You guys got any snow?
We had snow. We had one little burst of nasties, and the next day it was gone, and today it was in the 50s.
Well, I'll tell you what. We've had some really rotten weather today, but the last week has been great.
The last year we had, from Halloween on last year, the East Coast, that was it.
Okay.
It was unbelievable.
Hey, my friend,
everybody's so happy now.
We got to move. It was great talking to you.
Okay,
keep listening. Bye-bye. Tell your friends about us.
We'll
and we are at the top of the hour. We've got to take that top of the hour break. My name is Don Ecker. Dwight Schultz is with me here in studio, and our guest, Dr. Michael Shermer. And, Michael, I promise the next hour you're going to be talking a lot. Stay tuned.